Time for the Hamilton Corner with today's guest host, Stacey Washington.
Darkness is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
And Urban Family Talk.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media.
And the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors. Even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Corner.
We have a very good relationship, and I don't blame these people, but I will blame them if they don't act smart and do what they have to do, because they have no choice. I'll be honest with you. They have no choice. They're either going to make the trades fair, because our farmers have been hurt. You look at our farmers. For 15 years, the graph is going just like this, down. Our farmers have been hurt. Our workers have been hurt. Our companies have moved out and moved to Mexico and other countries, including Canada. Now, we are going to fix that situation. And if it's not fixed, we're not going to deal with these countries. But the relationship that I've had is great. So you can tell that to your fake friends at CNN. The relationship that I've had with the people, the leaders of these countries has been, I would really rate it on a scale of 0 to 10, I would rate it a 10. That doesn't mean I agree with what they're doing, and they know very well that I don't. So we're negotiating very hard tariffs and barriers. As an example, the European Union is brutal to the United States. They don't take, and they understand that. They know it. When I'm telling them, they're smiling at me. You know, it's like the gig is up. It's like the gig is up. They're not trying to. There's nothing they can say. They can't believe they got away with it. Canada can't believe it got away with it. Mexico. We have a $100 billion trade deficit with Mexico, and that doesn't include all the drugs that are pouring in because we have no wall. But we are. We started building the wall, as you know. $1.6 billion, and we're going to keep that going. But a lot of these countries actually smile at me when I'm talking, and the smile is, we couldn't believe we got away with it. That's the smile. So it's going to change. It's going to change. They have no choice. If it's not going to change, we're not going to trade with them.
Okay. Welcome to the Hamilton Corner. This is Stacey Washington. I'm host of Stacey on the Right on Urban Family Talk and American Family Radio also. I'm filling in for Abe today. It's a pleasure to be with you. And how about that to start the weekend off? If you missed the president's press conference where he came in like a boss. He didn't have any extra feelings available for this business interaction. He went in as if he was going into a negotiation, and I found it refreshing. I think it was at the end of the G7 summit when he was preparing to board Air Force One and fly over to Singapore, his very best press conference that he's ever given as president. And I dare say even when he was on the presidential campaign trail, and he gave some pretty epic press conferences back then, this one to me was his very best effort. And I think it was because he was fully within his wheelhouse and he was experiencing the fruits of a lot of really difficult, hard labor that he and the Trump administration put in leading up to this moment. 500 plus days of working really hard to implement the things that he promised on the campaign trail, like a reduction in the business tax, tax reform package for hardworking Americans, and the implementation of a strategy that really unleashed the engine of the American economy, bringing us to near full employment. This is something that it was said he couldn't do it. On my show, I played an audio montage, like a mashup of Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, Nancy Pelosi, and others saying that jobs that left this country were never coming back. Manufacturing, that's gone for good. That's never coming back. There's just certain things you can't fix. There are certain things you cannot do. Well, Donald Trump, and I believe it's the prayers of the American people praying for something different, praying for something better, it has come to pass that you can actually create jobs. You can employ record numbers of Americans. You can have people really looking forward to not just working, but moving up the ladder and improving their lives. And so I think having those benchmarks met before he went to the G7 really empowered President Trump to be able to make some difficult decisions as far as tactics and strategy were concerned. And it wasn't accidental. It's not like he rolled out of bed and went into a Twitter fury and then decided how he was going to behave at the G7. This has been long planned, and the execution of it, I thought, was pretty flawless, because he left the G7 with the other world leaders so flustered that they had to have press conferences and head to Twitter to try to kind of beat him down behind his back while he was on Air Force One flying to Singapore. And even that didn't work. Justin Trudeau has actually made himself appear quite weak internationally to other world leaders, because Canada enjoys such an amazing business relationship with the United States. A 270% tax on our dairy products sounds like a pretty good deal to me. The fact that it's over now doesn't mean that the relationship is damaged. It just means that there's a change in the dynamic. I also believe that other presidents, President Obama, President Bush, President Clinton even, they have to be looking at themselves and kind of kicking themselves and saying, you know, I could have improved this. Maybe I couldn't have fixed it completely, but I definitely could have changed things with these countries so that now the United States wouldn't be trying to negotiate back from a 270% tariff on dairy. It seems like we could have gotten that reduced over the years, reduced it by 10% every year. It would have gotten us at least down into, 100% tax on dairy. We could, could have gotten us out of the 200 and, yeah, I mean, that's just ridiculous. So we didn't see that. And now we're seeing it. And it's not accidental. It's an intentional policy by this president, an attempt by him to make sure that we have absolutely the best environment for our people. And that means, it doesn't mean that other countries have to be disadvantaged. It means that our negotiation tactics have to put our needs first. And then at the end of the day, whatever we come up with is bound to be more beneficial for our people. So here today on the show, we're going to talk a little bit more about taxation, because it was just funny to me. I honestly had the giggles when I heard that Seattle was planning a head tax to try to tax businesses that have large numbers of employees in their city to try to take care of their homeless problem. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to get into Bill Maher of HBO, a man who he should not have a job, wishing that the economy would crash so that we can get rid of Donald Trump. And then finally, we have this North Korean defector. It's audio of her doing an interview talking about the arduous process that she had to go through 2 years to get out of North Korea. And now she's in America and she's married and she has a family. But she experienced some harrowing, just awful things that she had to go through in order to get away from North Korea. And then I have a morning consult poll of Americans trying to take the temperature of how people feel about what's happening in North Korea with the president and the likelihood that it will go well. And I have some personal commentary on that. I think it's going to be a really, really good meeting, not because I have an expected outcome or I know what's going to happen, but because of, again, the shift in the dynamic and what I've been terming the burgeoning. It's something that is kind of being slowly unfurled before us, Trump doctrine, as it pertains to our dealings with, foreign leaders. It's something that he has systematically begun to roll out, and it's taking shape. It has a form now, and I believe that we're seeing the manifestation of years, decades, really, of private thought by Donald Trump that are now coming to the fore as he really fully takes command of his role as commander-in-chief and really head negotiator for our country. So let's talk about the Seattle head tax. So if you are just tuning into the show, I'm Stacey Washington, host of Stacey on the Right. I'm also the co-chair of Project 21, a National Center's National Advisory Council. And I'm filling in for Abraham Hamilton III today. Glad to be with you. And right now we're discussing the Seattle tax that was proposed to basically get businesses to pay their fair share, as it was, for the homeless problem in Seattle. So you've got Seattle city leaders, and they're basically the mayor, Jenny Durkin, and seven of the nine council members. They're basically rescinding this new tax that they were going to implement, and it was going to garner them. They said, if your business makes at least $20 million in gross revenues, we're going to charge you about $275 per full-time worker each year. The head tax that was proposed and then passed by the city council and approved by the mayor would have raised about $48 million a year for housing and homeless services. So that sounds fantastic, right? I mean, who cares? $275 a head. Amazon can pay that. But Amazon said, I don't think so. If you do that, we will not only stop construction on our new building that we because they actually have a building under construction in Seattle. We'll move HQ1 out of Seattle. That's what they said. So they told the Seattle City Council this before they passed the resolution, and they passed it anyway. They were kind of like, yeah, that's what you say you're going to do, but what will you really do? Well, what they really did was they stopped construction on the new building. They drew it to a halt because Amazon is not going to play around. $275 a head. I believe they have 55,000 employees in Seattle. So the response from them is they issued a statement saying, we heard you. They're going to consider new legislation this week. They've called a special meeting for Tuesday. And whatever measure is brought to basically rescind the new tax will need 5 votes to pass. And this is just days before a deadline, which is coming up this Thursday, for a campaign that was stood up immediately. A campaign was initiated to overturn the tax. They wanted to turn the tax proposal that was signed into law by the city council into a referendum on the November ballot. So imagine, you've got Seattle. It's a hugely liberal, like a bastion of liberalism. They would have this anti-tax measure galvanizing conservatives, low tax people, anybody in the vicinity that's a voter who doesn't like high taxes would be galvanized to come out. And they would be alongside all of the workers for Amazon who would be in unison voting to overturn this tax. Rather than have that, because that would make November really uncomfortable for them, they decided to get rid of it. This is what happens when business owners and employees and taxpaying Americans realize that something bad is happening in their city council and they take action. So it's a lesson for all of us. When we talk about the federal level, sure, there's a lot going on at the federal level. There's a lot. And what's going on there usually ends up being, you feel kind of powerless because you vote to send people to Washington, D.C., and then they get there. And when they come back, it's like, you know, invasion of the body snatchers. You're not sure if it's the same person you elected because that strong conservative voice is now coming back sounding a lot like, a talking head or a lobbyist, and you're not sure what happened. But on the local level, these people still live in the same house they lived in when they were elected. They still live in the neighborhood. You can still bump into them at the Walgreens or the CVS. These people want to remain elected, and they understand that hugely galvanizing issues like this one can result in them being removed or in the very minimum having something that you enacted as a tax legislation or a law, something at the local level, overturned by a voter referendum, basically cripples you for the remainder of your term. Because now everybody and their grandma sitting around talking about how you tried to tax them and then they stopped you. It's not good. So you have Amazon and other businesses who sharply criticize the tax, and as I mentioned, they had temporarily halted construction planning on the new high-rise building near the Seattle headquarters just to kind of send a message. And so one of the council members, Teresa Mosqueda, she's one of 4 sponsors of the original tax proposal, said on Monday that she couldn't back repealing the tax without a replacement strategy to house and shelter our neighbors who are experiencing homelessness. We cannot wait months or until next year for another proposal or process while people are sleeping in our parks and on our streets. I agree. But the campaign to stop the tax has already raised $235,000. And if they don't figure something out before Thursday, it's going to go to a referendum. So we'll follow the story and see what happens. When we get back, we'll be talking about Bill Maher over at HBO, wishing for doom and gloom for our economy. Keep it here. We'll be right back.
When courage becomes criminal. Hi, I'm Matt Staver with Freedom's Call. Sandra Merritt is known for her part in recording videos exposing Planned Parenthood's willingness to sell aborted babies. Now she continues to stand for her convictions, but this time in court. Liberty Counsel is representing her and passionately defending her freedom of speech and the freedom of the press to expose the truth. It's ridiculous, but California has twisted her courage into so-called criminal charges. Sandra didn't break any laws. She only angered some very powerful people, people with their hands in the pockets of Planned Parenthood. This situation is exactly what our Constitution is designed to protect against, people who break the law but want to punish others when they are exposed. Please pray for Sandra and for the Liberty Counsel team as we fight this battle. Women and their unborn babies are at risk. Stay informed at Liberty Counsel's website, lc.org. That's lc.org.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. We've been all over the country helping disaster victims who lose everything.
It's truly a blessing. I really don't have the words to express.
And yet, they see a glimmer of hope when a volunteer shows up.
Building the home, that's the second reason we're here. The number one reason is to share the gospel and give them hope.
It's everything that's right in America. I mean, it really represents the best that we have to offer.
That's one of the main reasons for doing it, is being able to be the hands and feet of Jesus and coming out and working with so many wonderful volunteers.
I just feel like it's important in this day and age to teach a child how to serve.
Please go to our website, 8daysofhope.com, and click on Get Involved, submit your email address, and the next time we go anywhere with a disaster, we'll invite you to come along as well.
I love coming in the job room because you can see these pieces of paper, they aren't just a piece of paper.
Right.
It's a family that's hurting, and it's a gospel opportunity.
And I just thank God, you know, for this moment. I mean, I'll be back in my home, and I know it's going to be awesome.
Come love others with 8 Days of Hope.
This week on Truth for Life, we're discussing how to live in light of Jesus' second coming. Even though we don't know the exact time of his return, there are many things we do know with absolute certainty. Be sure to listen Monday through Friday to Truth for Life with Alistair Begg.
Truth for Life, weekday mornings at 11:30 Central on AFR and online at afr.net. The AFA Journal covers critical contemporary issues that American families care about. Here's Ann Reed.
I had this awesome opportunity to go to the border of Israel and Syria, where a medical camp is being operated by the Friendships Ministry, which is out of Lake Charles, Louisiana. So God is using that ministry to soften hearts, I would say, in a tremendous way.
Sign up for a free 1-year subscription to the AFA Journal at afajournal.org.
Shining light into the darkness. This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio
and Urban Family Talk.
Can I ask about the economy? Because this economy is going pretty well. We have to, what? Why is that funny?
It is going well for now.
For now, right. That's my question. Is, like, I feel like the bottom has to fall out at some point. And by the way, I'm hoping for it, because I think one way you get rid of Trump is a crashing economy. Yeah. So please, bring on the recession. Yeah. Sorry if that hurts people, but it's either root for a recession or you lose your democracy.
Wow. So that's Bill Maher over at HBO, and he obviously, well, you know, he speaks like a man who's worth $100 million. I mean, that's who he is. If you're wondering, you know, how much does he make at HBO to make these kinds of statements, to call women female anatomical parts, to, you know, lambast the Palin family, the women of the Palin family, to say horrible things about Michelle Bachmann and other conservative women. This is a man who has earned a huge chunk of his annual $10 million a year salary by calling women names that other people get fired for. If Roseanne Barr gets fired for sending out a tweet, which I totally disagreed with, but it was a tweet. She wasn't on the job. The show was on hiatus. She got let go for that. How is Bill Maher still employed when he has used the N-word on the air, live on his show numerous times, and other words? Now, on HBO, they don't have a prohibition on profanity and vulgarity. It's paid cable premium television, premium being kind of an oxymoron here, and he doesn't get in trouble for it. But here he is calling for millions of Americans who have just found their way out of what is arguably the worst situation you can find yourself in, barring being physically ill, having a health issue. If you're healthy, the worst thing that you can, the worst situation you can be in is to have a family that you need to feed and house and clothe and keep cool in the summer and warm in the winter and lose your job. So for the economy to be doing as well as it is, and for Americans, people are literally out shopping so hard, you can't get in places. Like sometimes I was at a restaurant on our way back from picking something up at the store, me and our daughter. And I said, oh, I'm just going to swing by here and pick up some barbecue instead of cooking when I get home. Pull into the restaurant, go inside, and the line is wrapped all the way around the building. I kind of guesstimated that I'd be there for 45 minutes, and by the time I got to the front, they might be out of barbecue. So I just went home and cooked. And this is happening more and more often. We stopped going to brunch on Sundays. It's just crazy. People are out spending money, shopping, eating out, and I think it's fantastic. This is not me complaining. But I'm pointing out that if you're someone who's not worth $100 million and you've not been on vacation and you've not had enough money to do anything extra and you've just gotten a bonus from your employer because of the tax reform bill, or you've been raised up to $15 an hour, a ton of companies just basically said our new minimum wage is $15 an hour. All the people who were already working there and making less than that are now automatically at $15 an hour. I mean, I can think of three companies that did it right off the top of my head. These companies are rewarding employees who've been toiling away and maybe wanted a raise but didn't dare ask for one because they're worried. I don't want them to, you know, you're not grateful. I'm not saying anything. I'm just going to keep working. I'm glad I have a job. Now they have a job and they also have a bonus and they also have $15 an hour, which means some other employees not in the announcement also got raises, because if you were making 15 an hour and everybody below you now makes 15, that means you're probably getting a raise too. And so all of these Americans who are now, they finally have enough money to go out and maybe replace the sink in their bathroom or put some money aside for something they want, save up for something that maybe they need, maybe or something at their house that needs to be replaced, like an air conditioner or a furnace. There's just a never-ending list of things that have to be done. And Bill Maher, who's worth $100 million, wealth like that means he's on another level. For people who you hesitate to spend $200 to Bill Maher with a net worth of $100 million is like $2. It's just nothing to him. So he doesn't care if you've gotten a bonus or if you have expanded work opportunities or if you're now able to take that class at night. So that $15 an hour job in 2 years, you're going to be qualified to go for that $25 an hour job. I mean, the possibilities are endless. And if families are sitting around at home and the mom and the dad are in the kitchen and they're now thinking, you know what, if things keep going like this, Lord willing, we can actually get out of this apartment and get into a house. This is how much money we need to save. Now it's within reach because we were paycheck to paycheck, but now we've got a little bit of cushion. For families like that, this has to be one of the most insulting things he could say. Actually, more insulting than calling a woman female anatomy. And the reason I say that is because if you're a conservative and you're a woman and you're in politics, you've already been called that a million times. You've already seen it in your email box. You've already experienced that. So you know when you hear that, it's coming out of the mouth of someone who is uninformed and lacks the ability to argue coherently because they've resorted to name calling. So you can dismiss that. But for him to say, because he sits on a pile of $100 million, that everyone else should have to suffer, because when he talks about a recession, that doesn't include him. Even if he was let go from HBO with a net worth of $100 million and his age, he doesn't ever have to work again. The reason is because $100 million is way more than you need to live comfortably. Even in high, expensive California, he could move anywhere in the country, buy a place for cash, and still have gobs of money left over on which to live for the rest of his life. Recession, if we went into a depression, he could simply get on a private plane and move to another country that's not experiencing a depression, and he would not be hurt. Money like that insulates you from the economic circumstances that other people lay awake at night dreading. And that is what makes his statement so much worse than, say, some person calling you, you know, a name in your Twitter account or your direct messages or something like that. And I'm not excusing that, but I want it to be put into perspective. And when he said it, you heard there wasn't a lot of applause there. Some people, you know, tried to whoop it up and make it sound as if it was good. The people on the panel with him, they kind of just, you know, it's as if they're saying, yeah, it is what has to happen. But again, if you're paid by CNN to work on television, you are also likely not to be as negatively impacted as a family living at the median income here in the United States. Family of four, the median income in the United States is $56,000 a year. $56,000 a year sounds like a pretty nice chunk of change, but that also depends on where in the country you're living. It's a great living if you're living in Mississippi or Missouri, someplace like that. If you're living on the East Coast or the West Coast, you're basically, you don't have enough money to live on. Cost of living is too high. Your quality of life is extraordinarily low. And all of that pales in comparison to someone who he's built his career as a stand-up comedian starting in the 70s. Stand-up comedian, just pushing out as much profanity and degrading material as he possibly could. And over the years, instead of just being on, the comedy circuit, he made it onto David Letterman, and then he hosted the show Politically Incorrect, which it was a show about how offensive he could be every episode, more offensive than the episode before. And then he made a controversial remark related to September 11th, and Politically Incorrect was canceled. That was back in 2002. So then he did a bunch of radio and TV shows to discuss his remarks, and ultimately, a year later, he was hired by HBO to host a new show called Real Time with Bill Maher. He periodically contributes to Huffington Post, and he still actively tours as a stand-up comedian. Now, he's 62 years old. He also gets to screenwrite and produce films, and he's been in movies. He holds the record for the most Emmy losses. He's been nominated 22 times, 11 times for Politically Incorrect. And I'm not going to go into his personal relationships. And then he also has a significant investment in the New York Mets, which apparently he owns about 4% that he paid about $20 million for in 2012. Of course, today the Mets are worth around $2 billion. They're worth $2 billion, the team. So his 4% stake is worth $80 million. So that's how you get that $100 million net worth. Part of it is his ownership in the Mets. And so it's, you know, you can hold whatever opinions you want, but to actively call for a recession just because you hate Donald Trump really shows a level of malice that, again, how does he still have a show? And so it really comes down to us. If enough Americans said, I won't watch HBO, you know, I don't care anything about Game of Thrones, I'm not going to watch HBO if Bill Maher's on there. And the reason is because of his foul, degrading, unacceptably un-American language. And this isn't about the First Amendment. The First Amendment protects you from the government limiting your speech or preventing you from freely assembling. Private sector communications are governed by the employer-employee relationship and the contract. As we've seen, ABC didn't hesitate to fire Roseanne Barr for comments she made in private, and TBS didn't hesitate to keep Samantha Bee on for comments she made on the air on a pre-recorded show that was scripted by producers, that she shot in front of a studio audience pre-recorded, that was then edited, packaged, edited again, final packaged, commercials inserted, and loaded into their network for airing at a later time during her regularly scheduled time slot. and she said what she said, and she still has a job. So the answer here is, you know, we can discuss how absolutely unacceptable his comments are until the cows come home, or we can discuss it and then decide this is not something I want to support with my money. And I know what you're thinking. Well, then what can I support? That means I can't buy anything. I can't shop anywhere. It doesn't mean you can't buy anything, and it doesn't mean you can't shop anywhere. It doesn't mean there's nothing on TV you can watch, but it does mean that at some point we have to say, okay, that's too far. We draw the line, we make the decision, we pull the trigger. That's what our family did with Netflix. And it was, I thought it was going to be much harder than it actually was. It seems like the more we prune back what we're paying for with the television, every time we make a cut, it's like it's harder, but then it's easier. And in the end, it's really just easier. There's less to watch. There's less quality television to watch, period, because they're making less quality television. But it means we have time to do other things. And it just means I don't have to hear that Bill Maher said this. And I'm outraged, obviously, but I also know I'm not paying for it. I am not funding Bill Maher saying this stuff. So, I mean, you can look at the advertisers. We could, you know, Google who are Bill Maher's advertisers on Politically Incorrect. And you could say, I'm not going to buy their products. You could send a letter. You could send a tweet. You can do all that stuff. But in the end, it's HBO. The funding of HBO is what puts him on the air so he can say this stuff. And he has an avid following. Check out his Twitter feed. I mean, millions of people follow him on Twitter. They hang on his every tweet. And the ignorance that he puts out there, you would think that people would just get fed up with it and get sick of it, but they're just eating it up. So we have to be the ones to say, you know, enough is enough. I'm not going to support this. And that's where I am. So if you want to call the show and weigh in, 888-589-8840, that's the listener call line. And so there were a number of other things going on today. There is a report, and I haven't been able to verify it elsewhere, about there being some kind of situation going on at the Department of Justice, and a bunch of police officers were there, and they were outside, and they were going in a group. And so over at Gateway Pundit, they're reporting that it was, you know, possibly that someone swatted the DOJ. I find that kind of hard to believe. But that's a story that's developing. The other story over at the AP that I thought was just ridiculous, but it's, you know, when you take the temperature, like let's say your child's not feeling well and you take their temperature and they have a fever, then you're not surprised when they say their tummy aches or they have a headache, because one symptom, the fever, means the other symptoms may or may not be present. And it increases the likelihood that those other symptoms will be present. And that is what we see here in Nevada. This is Farumph, Nevada. A state marketed as a place where people can indulge in all manner of sins is confronting its status as the only place in America where you can legally pay someone for sex. A coalition of religious groups and anti-sex trafficking activists has launched referendums to ban brothels in two of the seven Nevada counties where they're legally operating. The effort dovetails with a campaign by the state's most famous pimp for a seat in the state legislature. That's right. You heard me right. And a man who works as a pimp is now campaigning for a seat in the Nevada state legislature. His name's Dennis Hoff. He operates a half a dozen brothels in two counties, and he starred in the HBO adult reality series Cat House. He's challenging incumbent Assemblymember James Oscarson of Farumph in a Republican primary on Tuesday. Hoff said, Nevada is the last of the live and let live states and was built on gaming, liquor, girls, and mining. So if you legalize prostitution, you can't be surprised if people who run brothels want to be in charge of you. Can you? This is where we are. You take the temperature. If there's a fever, you know there's a problem. You're going to find other symptoms. And this is one of them. We'll be back with more Hamilton Corner right after this.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, we only go to the Holy Land once a year, and that's in March. Last year, we filled up several months in advance. So if you want to go in March of 2019, it's time to look at the details. You can get a brochure from us at 800-FAMILIES, 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5, and leave us your name and your telephone number, or go to twholyland.com, twholyland.com. It's going to be a wonderful time in Israel. We'll go to the Sea of Galilee, the Jordan River, the Holy City of Jerusalem, Bethlehem, Masada, the Dead Sea, and on the list goes. If you'd like to go with us in March of 2019, all the information is available at twholyland.com. Order a brochure by calling 800-FAMILIES, option 5.
Hi, I'm David Barton, founder of Wall Builders.
And I'm Tim Barton, the president of Wall Builders. And we want to let you know about an opportunity this summer for 18 to 25-year-olds to come be a part of what we're calling the Leadership Training Program. Actually, the website is wallbuilders.com/leadership-training if you want to see more information. But really what we're doing is trying to help young people combat a lot of the nonsense they're learning in academia, things that are anti-American or anti-the Bible. And so we actually dig into the Bible, we dig into American history and the Constitution and education, and try to give a really good inoculation against some of the things that they're hearing in academics.
Yeah, Tim, you're exactly right. This is such an excellent opportunity to have the apologetics of the things that they'll face in academia and the culture. So if you're from 18 to 25 years old and you want training in this, and by the way, you get to actually hold the handwritten documents of George Washington, John Adams, and other aspects of American history, this is a great opportunity this summer. 2 weeks, go to wallbuilders.com/leadership-training. Hope to see you this summer.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Carissa Erickson was selected to be a speaker at a graduation ceremony at Colorado Mesa University. She included in her remarks a reference to God always having a purpose in your life, and she mentioned a Bible verse, John chapter 16, verse 33. But university officials who reviewed her remarks told Carissa she could not mention Jesus or the Bible verse. Religious language would not be tolerated, that's what their email said, warning there would be repercussions if she ignored their orders. So Carissa contacted Alliance Defending Freedom, a law firm that specializes in religious liberty cases. They told the university the First Amendment protects Carissa's speech. She has a constitutional right to mention her faith. And just like that, Colorado Mesa University rescinded its religious purge. There's a lesson here, folks. If you see something unconstitutional, say something. I'm Todd Starnes.
The Hamilton Corner podcast and one-minute commentaries are available at AFR.net and UrbanFamilyTalk.com. Back to the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk.
How bad was it in North Korea when you were there? We see the stories and the pictures of hunger and deprivation.
It's hard to say because I mean, I thought, like, I never knew my country was isolated. Mm. People in North Korea, they don't know that they are slaves. That's why, you know, if you don't know you are slaves, how do you demand to be free? So when I was in North Korea, for me, just seeing dead bodies, if you get up in the morning in the train stations, they're like corpse, dead bodies, and they put them all together in the carriage and they move it around.
Who are these dead bodies?
They're just normal people. My uncle died, my grandma died, and so many people. In the 90s, 2 to 3 million people died from this starvation, but not the people in Pyongyang, the elite people. Kim Jong-il was fat. He was very, very fat. But the people in the northern side, and because North Korea using the starvation as a tool to control people, even though they can feed their entire population, but Kim Jong-un choose not to feed his own people.
So she's talking about Kim Jong-un. She's a North Korean defector. And in other parts of the interview, she talks about how she would lay up at night hungry and she could see the lights in China. And she said, if they have electricity at night, they probably have food. If I could get there, I could eat too. And so she and her mom actually made the trip. And it only took one day to cross the desert, but it was like, you know, really, really cold. They just had the clothes on their bodies, no suitcases, no gloves, no hats. And after they did that, they were sex trafficked and they had a bunch of other really just horrifying experiences. But at the end of that 2 years, because she was forced to marry a Chinese farmer, she was forced to live and work for him and a bunch of other stuff. Then she finally was able to make it out and down to South Korea and then to the United States. And so hers is a story of success, but it's also a cautionary tale. And as we look towards the summit, the president of the United States meeting with Kim Jong-un, and he has really set the table for us, President Trump has, in his statements. He says he's been asked repeatedly, what do you expect? He said he expects to meet this man and know within the first minute whether or not he likes him. And he expects to know within the first 5 minutes or so whether or not they'll be able to come to an understanding. But that the goal of the first meeting that they're going to have, where they sit down alone for 2 hours with just the translators, is for them to spend the time talking to each other and establishing a baseline for their communications. And so I've heard some comments, seen some comments on the news over the past couple of days. Well, he's unprepared. I don't think so. You can find video of Donald Trump doing interviews with Chris Wallace and others from 20, 25 years ago, talking about America's relationship with North Korea. More than that, I think it's kind of crazy for the news media to think that Donald Trump would come out and talk about all of the time he spent poring over information about North Korea, all of the surveillance video and satellite imagery he's viewed, all of the briefings he's had on the state of North Korea's economy and their people, the propaganda that North Korea puts out to their people about Americans. If you think Donald Trump's going to sit around and talk about all the preparation he's done so that that information can be transmitted to Kim Jong-un, you just don't understand how this game is played. Now, in addition to that, I learned this morning, I was listening to an interview by Jay Carafano of the Heritage Foundation. He's a foreign policy expert, a veteran. He was an officer in the Army, I believe. He was explaining that this two-hour meeting sounds like an eternity to us. I mean, when have you ever met someone for the very first time and sat down with them for 2 hours straight? Well, 2 hours with two translators is really 1 hour, because everything that is said by either one of them has to be translated for the other one to listen to. So everything is said twice. So cut that in half. Now you have, they're really going to be sitting down with each other for an hour. And it's going to be some pleasantries, some kind of introductory stuff. And then there's going to be, you know, what you said you wanted to meet. What goals do you have? Things like that. They have to have some kind of initial sizing up of each other in order to move forward. So for people who are actually sitting around waiting for there to be some announcement tomorrow about when they've signed an agreement, you don't get to a bilateral treaty between two nations in 2 hours. You don't get to it in 2 days. They're not going to get to it in 2 weeks. The history between North Korea and the United States is extraordinarily complicated. I was just learning today about we have a Navy vessel that was shot at and confiscated in the waters off of North Korea. And they actually took control of that vessel and they've kept it and turned it into a museum. They kept our sailors for 11 months and tortured them and beat them before releasing them back to us. And 11 of our Navy personnel were killed. 11 were injured and one was killed in the initial skirmish when they fired on the vessel. So Greta Van Susteren and others are tweeting about the fact that they want the Navy vessel back, and that would be a great way for Kim Jong-un to demonstrate his desire to have a relationship with the United States. And as if that's everything, it's not. It's the human rights abuses by North Korea and the fact that, as that North Korean defector just shared, they have enough food to feed their people, but they choose not to because the people aren't actually citizens, they're slaves. And their master is Kim Jong-un. So I've also seen some stories about people really getting into the weeds on whether or not he will share exactly how many nuclear warheads they have and what kind of capabilities they legitimately have or expect to obtain shortly. Why would anyone trust anything that Kim Jong-un has to say about what they have or do not have? The most reliable source of information on that is our own signal intelligence and our satellite imagery. Really, it is, because how can you trust anything that he says? And this is our initial, stab at diplomacy with this guy. So I think it's important for us to have this meeting. I do think, you know, whether you like it or not, it's the decision that the president has made is to move forward with this. And I do think that if you step back away from it for a second and don't take it as an emotional exercise, he's legitimizing a leader. I don't think that's it at all. I think it's more about Donald Trump really sees a lot of power in leaders who are able to substantially change the lives of the people that they govern. And that's why so much of the effort that he's made thus far as president has been geared towards controlling the border and improving the economy. Because people who are working and have jobs and money to spend are much less likely to be unhappy than people who maybe, you know, you have something else that you want, like full gender equality and every Tuesday is gender free day and all that stuff, but you don't have a job and you're starving or your kids don't have, you know, you don't have enough food to feed your kids. You're not going to care what day is gender free day. You're not going to care about that. So with this guy, with Kim Jong-un being a dictator, there is something to be said for offering a dictator the ability to offer his people something that they've not yet experienced: prosperity, the ability to bring his company into the his country into the modern age, to be able to have rapid advancement and entrance into regular international society for North Korea. It's a good thing. It would be a good thing for him. So there's a lot to it. There's a lot that can be said for it. And I just think there's an opportunity there. And if it doesn't pan out, we're none the worse for wear, because we still have our sanctions in place and we still have all the same capabilities we had before. But at the very minimum, we haven't had any more rocket tests. And that's really good for America and for Singapore and Japan and South Korea, our allies in the region. Let's go to the phones. We've got Tyrone from Oklahoma. Thanks for calling the Hamilton Corner.
Thank you.
Sure.
And I just wanted to make a comment about Bill Maher. He talked about protecting the democracy, but what about the at the expense of the economy? And I can't believe that one person, it hates one person so much that he will sacrifice a whole country. But also, it seems to be that their camps are hatred. And I'm an older person, and I've been a information obsessive information junkie ever since as long as I can remember. And a lot of the news I hear on stations, they seem to forget. And I think I can't understand they research. But to make a long story short, when Clinton was in office and Dr. Doctrine, which I love very much, was on Focus of the Family, mm-hmm. he made a similar statement. He said that things were going too well. Wall Street was always ringing the bell at the end of the deal. And he said he wished a crisis would come to the United States to move people back to God. So it should be on tape. I don't know where it is, but I remember. But both people are so, we're in such slow camp. And even though the enemy, we should, when our enemy does well, we should rejoice, especially if they're benefiting. We are not to pray for someone to fail just because we don't like them. If they're doing a good job, we should pray for them and rejoice in their well-being. That's all I had to say.
Thank you. Thank you for your comment. And I have to agree with you. I respect Dr. Dobson greatly, and we have a number of his books here in our house, and I've actually interviewed him on my radio show. But I do remember him making that statement, and I do remember feeling it felt like a little stab to the heart, because in the Bible, many different people groups have been drawn closer to God through adversity, but that is not a requirement for us to draw close to God. It's a choice that we can make, a decision we can make, and we should definitely work hard to draw close to him without being forced to do so through our circumstances. So I totally agree with you. And I feel that way. I felt that the disrespect that was shown to President Obama out of certain quarters of the Republican Party was unacceptable. It was unbefitting the office that President Obama held. I disagreed greatly with President Obama. I still do. I saw only value really that he had for me that was a true point of compliment for him was his relationship with his wife and daughters. Seems to be a very loving husband and father. And I always commended him for that. But the policies I disagreed with, but I did not agree with the disrespect. And so, you know, I agree with you. I think that's we can't, basically we're saying we can only appreciate what we have if we're in adversity. And Bill Maher thinks we can only protect our democracy if people don't have jobs. That's crazy. We can do more than one thing at a time. So we have this morning consult poll and we have just a couple of minutes left. We might be able to take one more call, but I want to give you guys this info. Morning Consult and Politico got together and did a poll. They say voters are split on whether the summit will improve U.S. relations with North Korea. The survey was conducted June 7th through 10th among 1,994 registered voters, asking Americans their opinions about U.S. and North Korea relations. The key highlights is that most Americans don't think the summit will lead to North Korea getting rid of their nukes. Two-thirds of voters said North Korea is not going to denuclearize. Voters were split on whether U.S.-North Korea relations would improve. 41% said that it would improve. 18% had no opinion whatsoever. 40% of voters said it was likely that the summit would result in improved relations. 49% of the voters said they were confident in Trump's ability to handle the threats posed by North Korea. 44% of the voters said they were not confident. The full results are available at morningconsult.com. And the methodology was, as I shared, 1,994 registered voters out of a national sample. The interviews were conducted online and, you know, so pretty typical, nice size sample group. And that's pretty, I'm not going to take a Chicken Little response to this. The sky is not falling. It is not going to be a horrible, horrible development for the president to sit down and meet with Kim Jong-un, nor is it going to solve every problem we've ever had. It is simply a step that the president is taking in the hopes of improving the relationship with this dictator. And notice I said with the dictator, because if you think of Kim Jong-un as a traditional leader, like, you know, a leader of Europe or some other nation that we have really close ties with, then you're going to misapply some of the rules of the engagement, because the rules of engagement with an ally are completely different than a first time face-to-face meeting on a third party location between our president and Kim Jong-un. But I have heard, and I think it was a deliberate, you know, putting out of information by the president that he would invite Kim Jong-un to the United States. I think for a dictator in a country like his, he has been abroad before. It's not like Kim Jong-un's never left his country, but he's never been to the United States. And so when you read history books about the way the Russian government, communist Russia, would propagandize about Germany and Europe and the United States, they would say things like, yeah, you've heard that their shelves are full of goods, but that's not true. You've heard stories about the prosperity and how, you know, the children are all fat and the women are all beautiful. That's not true. Well, there's one thing to put the propaganda out there and to kind of think, yeah, it's propaganda, but I have to do this for the good of my people. I want to rule over them. It's another thing to walk and really live in the truth of that by visiting one of the countries that you've been telling all the lies about. So, yeah, that's the Hamilton Corner. I'm back with you tomorrow evening as well. It'll be my pleasure to be with you then. And have a great night. God bless. And thanks for being here.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.